Well, this morning we continue our short series on Who Do You Think You Are? And this morning we have no time for introductions. We've got lots to think about and lots to get our minds around. So please come with me to Genesis chapter 49. And we're going to be looking at two sons this morning, Zebulun and Issachar. So Genesis 49 verses 13 to 15, two sons, 2 points. Who do you think you are? Are you, verse 13, a Zebulun? So point number one, Zebulun, land of opportunity. What does Jacob say to Zebulun? Verse 13, Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea, he shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. And that's it. That's all we've got to go on. When the promised land was divided up, Zebulun's portion was indeed near the sea. And the sense of this prophecy is of an animal, as it were, settling down with its face towards the sea and its rear towards Sidon on the Mediterranean coast. In other words, Zebulun looks out towards the sea. Behold the sea, wrote the poet, Whitman. And Zebulun, that's exactly what it does. It beholds the sea. So, well, the British are an island people. No Briton lives more than 80 miles from tidal water. And in their ancestry, most Britons have some acquaintance with the sea. My father was in the Royal Navy. And if you're sceptical about Britain's naval heritage, just witness how many nautical terms have found their way into the English language. Aloof, booty, clearing the decks, cut and run, giving a wide berth, hand over fist, not enough room to swing a cat, swinging the lead, 3 sheets to the wind, turning a blind eye. I could bore you all day with them. There are loads of them. So what are we saying? Britain once had an empire. It's the largest empire the world has ever seen. It's an empire upon which the sun never set. Upon what was that empire founded? Well, British power and influence and wealth was built on the seas and the ships that sailed those seas. We were a maritime power. Our merchant navy was bigger than all the other merchant navies of the world put together. Our Royal Navy was bigger than all the other Royal Navies put, all other navies rather, put together. We were a maritime power, a maritime trader. Britannia really did rule the waves. You might say, verse 13, Britain shall dwell by the haven of the sea, she shall become a haven for ships. Behold the sea. Our trade was, and still is, carried by ships. So do you see what it's saying? Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea, she shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. Zebulun will be the land of opportunity. Opportunity founded upon the seas. Opportunity founded upon trade. When Israel trades with the nations beyond her borders, across the Great Sea, as it was called, the Mediterranean, much of that trade will pass through Zebulun. What's more, Zebulun is also next to the Sea of Galilee. So Zebulun, as a land, as a tribe, it stands at the junction of opportunity and blessing. He doesn't have to go and find the blessing. The blessing flows to him. He doesn't have to go and seek the opportunities. The opportunities flow to him. By virtue of his location, his position within the 12 tribes, blessing and opportunity, they freely flow to Zebulun. Yes? What comes to Israel from beyond often is going to pass through Zebulun. What leaves Israel for beyond will pass through Zebulun. The opportunities are already there. They're just there to be seized. The blessings are already there to be enjoyed, but not just for Zebulun, but also to be enjoyed also for the benefit of all the tribes. So Zebulun is the land of opportunity. Hence Moses' words 400 years later. We turn to it, Deuteronomy 33, verses 18 and 19. This is what Moses says 400 years later. Deuteronomy 33. And of Zebulun he said, rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out. They shall call the peoples to the mountains. There they shall offer sacrifices of righteousness, for they shall partake of the abundance of the seas and of treasures hidden in the sand. And in fact, we're told, rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out, and Issachar in your tents. So if Issachar stays at home, what does Zebulun do? Zebulun is going out. And what does it do? For you shall partake of the abundance of the seas and of the treasures hidden in the sand. Out of the abundance of the seas, Zebulun will be made rich. And shall discover treasures that are hidden in the sand of the seashore. But those treasures won't, those riches won't destroy Zebulun. On the contrary, we read, they'll offer sacrifices of righteousness. His contact with the nations won't contaminate him. On the contrary, he'll call them to worship the true God. They shall call the peoples to the mountain. It's the mountain of God. It's an invitation to the Gentiles to come and worship the God of Israel. So do you see, blessing is going to flow through this tribe, both to the Gentiles beyond, inviting them to come and worship God, and the blessing will flow to the other tribes, to Israel itself. So Zebulun, the land of opportunity. Now, how does this apply to us? Who do you think you are? Are you a Zebulun? What do you think? Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. If God settles Zebulun in the place of opportunity and blessing, then God in a specific way has made some of his people Zebulunites. He settles them in places of opportunity and influence, be it in commerce, industry, science, politics, education, the media, sport. And what might be a danger to you is not a danger to them. And what might contaminate you won't contaminate them. On the contrary, they continue to offer the sacrifices of righteousness. And the wealth and the abundance of their position they share with all of God's people. And their contact with the Gentiles doesn't contaminate them. On the contrary, it becomes the opportunity to call the Gentiles to come to know the living God. They shall call the peoples to the mountains, says, to the mountain, says Moses. Now, Lord Radstock of Mayfield was a 19th century aristocrat. He was a man of position, wealth, influence. He was a man of extraordinary gifts. And he was also a lover of Jesus Christ. And he was a Zebulunite. He dwelt by the haven of the sea, quite literally, because he lived in Southampton. But also spiritually. He moved freely among the aristocracy. He was a personal friend to royalty, Princess Louise of Denmark, Queen Sophie of Sweden. And he was particularly used by God in Russia. And so he was preaching the gospel to Russian nobility. And in those extravagant drawing rooms of St. Petersburg, he was pressing upon them, upon the nobility, the need to come to Jesus Christ. Doors which were shut to the many were open to him. Situations which would have been a temptation to many of God's people, that wealth, that influence, that power, they were safe with him. He was a Zebulunite. Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships. And the fire of God which was kindled in those St. Petersburg meetings, it soon spread throughout the whole of Russian society and brought about revival. Do you see? He was a Zebulunite. What isn't safe for others is safe for God's Zebulunites. And God did great things through him, calling the nations to worship the true and living God. Now, perhaps this morning you find yourself in just such a place, a haven by the sea. You mix in circles that few of us do. Opportunities and blessings come your way, which for most of us are out of our reach. And what's not safe with the many is safe with you. Well, says Moses, says God's word, make sure you continue to offer the sacrifices of righteousness. Make sure that as God enriches you and gives you these opportunities, you use it for the good of Israel. And as you rub shoulders with the Gentiles, as it were, make sure that far from being contaminated by them, that it's an opportunity for you to call them to worship the true and living God. There are some people who are in a specific way are Zebulunites. But what about the rest of us? We're not in places of privilege or influence or opportunity in that sense. What of us? Well, we're all called to be Zebulons, one way or another. To each of us, God has given a haven by the sea. Opportunities you don't have to seek, but which come your way. Blessings, as it were, you don't have to wring out, but blessings which come freely to you. What do I mean? What are these opportunities? What are these blessings? The hours of your day. The strength that's in your body. The gifts that God has placed in your keeping. The opportunities he gives you every day to do good. The work of the kingdom. So what are you going to do with those opportunities? Have you the opportunity to speak? A haven by the sea. Well, make sure you speak of Jesus. Have the opportunity to give hospitality. Maybe it's only a cup of coffee and a ginger nut. Well, then open your doors and welcome people in. Have you the blessing of energy, flair, zeal? Then take the initiative. Put yourself forward. Start volunteering. No excuses. Have you the blessing of wealth? Then give generously. Have you the blessing of friendship and the opportunity to befriend? Well, don't sit there on your hands. There must be somebody you can draw near to and befriend and help and encourage. Have you the blessing of health? Well, then visit the housebound and the sick. Have you the blessing of children? Well, then don't hold your children close to you and hold the world at bay. Don't become a Christian isolationist. Recognize that with your children you dwell by a haven of the sea. Start engaging with the parents and the children beyond your borders. I know of one godly woman who turned her pushchair and her toddler into a mobile evangelistic unit. When you have a child to talk about, it opens up all sorts of doors, all sorts of possibilities, all sorts of relationships which wouldn't otherwise be there. People can talk, they engage, friendships begin. Who knows where those friendships are going to end? But those doors won't always be open. They won't always be in a pushchair. You won't always have those opportunities. There won't always be a haven by the sea. Children grow up, the doors close. So if you have young children, engage with the world beyond your borders. Don't become a Christian isolationist. Don't pull up the drawbridge and keep the world out in that sense. Engage with the families beyond your borders. Engage with the children beyond your borders. But what if they contaminate me and my children? Christian friend, if I don't have compassion on the families and children around me, why should I expect God to have compassion on my children? If I'm not concerned for them, then why should I expect God to be concerned for my own? Would you want God to measure it out to you, maybe, as you've been measuring it out to them? All of us will dwell at some time by a haven by the sea. But as we close this point, God may have given you a haven by the sea for a very limited time. The opportunity is there, but it will soon be gone. So now is the time to seize it. Come with me to Acts chapter 16. Now Acts 16, we're on Paul's second missionary journey. What's Paul's plan? Well, his plan, as he starts his second missionary journey, is to retrace his steps. He wants to visit all those churches he established in his first missionary journey and to encourage them and to consolidate them. But his plan is overruled by the Spirit of God. Chapter 16, verse 6. Now, when he had gone through Phrygia and the region of Galatia, they were forbidden by the Holy Spirit to preach the word in Asia. That's the Roman province of Asia. And they had come to Mysia. And after they had come to Mysia, they tried to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit did not permit them. So passing by Mysia, they came down to Troas. Now what? What's Paul going to do now? Every direction he turns, God shuts the door. But then through a vision, God opens a door which Paul wasn't even looking for. A door he didn't even, as it were, know was there. A door of opportunity, verse 9. And a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia stood and pleaded with him, saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." Now, after he had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go to Macedonia, concluding that the Lord had called us to preach the gospel to them. Paul is dwelling by the haven of the sea in every respect. He's come to Troas as a haven by the sea. And he concludes, in this spiritual haven of the sea, that God is calling him, God is leading him in a new and unexpected direction. He's to take the gospel across the sea to Macedonia. Now, it's only a short step to Macedonia. But in redemptive terms, this is a giant leap. That's why it wasn't in Paul's mind. That's why it wasn't in his plan. It's a huge leap he's taking. Because what he's doing, he's leaving the orbit and the influence of the Eastern world and Jerusalem, and is crossing over into the Western world and ultimately Rome. And it's a step of enormous significance. It's only a short journey. But when he crosses over to Macedonia, he comes to Philippi, he finds himself at a women's prayer meeting, he preaches the gospel there. What begins there will actually end with the gospel conquering the Western world, the Roman world. So a door of opportunity opens up, he didn't know it was there. He's actually literally dwelling by a haven of the sea, but it's true in spiritual terms. This opportunity opens up. Now what would have happened if Paul had delayed? What would have happened if Paul had said, "Look, it's not in the plan. I set out, this wasn't in my mind. I wasn't planning to go to Macedonia." What if Paul had come up and said and listed all the difficulties of going over into that part of the world? Well, what do we read? Verse 10. Now, after he had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go to Macedonia. There's no delay. His obedience is total, absolute, and it's now. Now, after we've seen the vision, immediately we sought to go to Macedonia, concluding the Lord had called us to preach the gospel to them. Paul seizes the opportunity immediately. He obeys. Now, Christian friend, what of you? Has God brought you to a haven by the sea? And an opportunity has come. It's an open door. But it's not actually in your plans. You weren't expecting this, you weren't planning this, you hadn't thought this through, as it were, but an open door has come. What are you going to do with it? You can say, "Well, it's not in my plan. I wasn't expecting this. I haven't got the time for all this. Look at all the difficulties there might be. I need some extra reassurance before I do anything." What are you going to do? Are you going to seize it without delay? What is it? Maybe it's a letter. Maybe it's a chance meeting. Maybe it's an unexpected conversation. Or it's a new neighbor. Or a new development at work. Or it's some event in the family that no one could have anticipated. Maybe it's an opportunity to go abroad. To step beyond the border. To do something beyond your expectation. Maybe there's an opportunity with Christianity Explored. There's somebody, and they're never going to be interested, but something has happened. There's been a conversation, a situation has arisen. Christianity Explored is going to be beginning soon. You can say, "Here's a personal invitation from me. Please come. Oh, well, I wouldn't do that. I've never done that before. God has put you by a haven by the sea. The opportunity is there. You haven't had to go and find it. It's come to you. A door's opened which you didn't know was there or expect to open. What are you going to do? And what about us as a church? Other opportunities that we're facing. Says the word of God, in that Zebulunite situation, you're to seize the opportunity. Zebulun was the gateway to calling the Gentiles to worship God. Is this an opportunity for the gospel? To share with them salvation's riches. Then seize it. Stop for a moment, think. In the silence. Who or what is the Spirit laying on your heart? Is it something that keeps coming back? It keeps coming back. It keeps coming back. What is it? Seize it. Take it. It may appear to be very small in your eyes. But who would have thought that the empire of Christ in the Western world would have begun at a woman's prayer meeting in Philippi? But what begins there? Soon Paul is preaching to thousands. Christian friends, seize the opportunity now. Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. Okay, point number two. Let's look now at Issachar. Let's go back to Genesis 49. Well, if Zebulun is the land of opportunity, Issachar is the land of lost opportunity. Let's look at verses 14 and 15. Issachar is a strong donkey, lying down between two burdens. He saw that rest was good, that the land was pleasant. He bowed his shoulder to bear a burden and became a band of slaves. So Issachar is a strong donkey. He's able to bear loads that would crush others. Issachar is qualified to get the job done. He's a donkey. He can go places. He's got great capacities. His potential is enormous. But it all comes to nothing. Issachar is a strong donkey lying down between two burdens. He saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. Here's a tribe with great potential, but it comes to nothing. Interesting, isn't it, that passage we looked at when Moses talks about Zebulun. He just simply gives Issachar one line. It says, "Rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out, and Issachar in your tents." That's all he says about Issachar. Talks about all the tribes. All that happens to Issachar is they stay in their tents. Lost opportunities. Now why? Why were they like that? Because united to that strength which Issachar had was a fundamental weakness. It was a desire to lie down, to take things easy, to enjoy the good things of the land. He saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. Now, the land of Issachar was particularly fruitful. Blessing came easy in the land of Issachar. You didn't have to overdo it to have an armful at the harvest time. And so that great potential, this big, strong donkey capable of so much, it was wasted. Blessings came so easy that Issachar became lazy. Now, some of you will know Ewan Murray. Plays rugby for Northampton Saints and also for Scotland. Now, if you know Ewan, you've seen Ewan, he's a big bear of a man, isn't he? And he plays his rugby in the crucible of the scrum. But as he said, he grew up in that part of Scotland where the landscape is rough and the climate is harsh. And in some way, and we could look at lots of other examples, in some way the climate, the landscape in which he grew up, has got into the man. That's why he likes to do what he does. Yes, so on a Saturday afternoon when it's freezing, it's sub-zero, where people like to sit in front of a warm fire snacking on chocolates, Ewan enjoys the hardship, the blood, sweat and tears of the scrum. It's true, landscapes, climates, they get into people. And the easy blessing of Issachar's portion of land, it got into Issachar, got into the grain. Things were so easy, they became so easy. They obviously had a predisposition, and that weakness was, as it were, taken advantage of. The big, strong donkey with a predisposition to take things easy soon saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. Why put yourself out? Why not enjoy the blessings of Canaan? After all, the land's been given to us. It's here to enjoy. Let's enjoy it. As long as you don't ask too much of us. But of course, it can't go on like that, can it? Because what happened with other nations? Marauding tribes, maybe the Canaanites that lived in that area. What happened when they wanted a slice of the good land? Did Issachar use their strength to subdue those people and cast them out of the land? After all, it was a big bone donkey. It was thoroughly equipped to do that. It would have been very powerful in war. Equipped to get the job done. No, they got so used to taking things easy. When those other nations came in, Issachar couldn't rouse themselves. Couldn't rise to the situation. Didn't want to drive them out. Because if they drive them out, that means there's going to be war and hardship and pain and stress and difficulty. The very things that Issachar was used to avoiding. Now, no doubt in the initial days when those tribes moved in, those peoples moved in, they came to some accommodation. Issachar's a big, strong tribe, a big, strong people. You don't mess with them immediately. They settle down to some sort of peaceful coexistence. Let's continue to enjoy the land. As long as you people don't give us any trouble, that's all right. Anyway, as they saw themselves being a strong people, we can always kick them out later. We've got a mind for it. They pose no threat to us. Issachar is a strong donkey. But of course, generations pass, don't they? And the children got used to these peoples living on their land. They got used to a certain way of doing things. And it wasn't long before a peaceful coexistence with these other peoples became a bondage. And that's what happened. History reveals that the people of Issachar settled down for peaceful coexistence. They ended up as forced labor for these nations. And that's why we read verse 15, he bowed his shoulder to bear a burden and became a band of slaves. They ended up as subservient people. This big, strong donkey of a tribe ended up becoming a band of slaves. It's a supreme paradox, isn't it? Here's Issachar, so strong, capable of so much. You don't mess with Issachar. What they can do in the service of God. And yet they end up using all their strength in the service of others, those who are not the Lord's. Do you see? Hidden within that great strength of Issachar, and Jacob can see it as he looks at his son, hidden in that great strength was a fundamental weakness, an unwillingness to put themselves out. And it led ultimately to their downfall. Now what about us? Who do you think you are? Are you an Issachar? Are you strong? But that strength doesn't map across the whole of your character and personality. You're strong, but there's a fundamental weakness. Now, maybe you're a Samson. Now, there was a strong donkey, wasn't there? He even fought with the jawbone of a donkey. Why does Samson play such silly games with Delilah? It beggars belief, doesn't it? She says to him, oh, Samson, you're so big and you're so strong. Please tell me where your strength lies. Now you think Samson's going to twig. You know, after the first time it happens and she tries on, the second time, the third time, you think, well, Samson, come on, you know what's going on. Haven't you twigged yet what she's up to? And I'm sure Samson did twig what was going on. He wasn't that daft. He did know what was happening. But you see, when you're so strong, you think you can handle the situation. When you're so strong, you think you're in control. After all, if things turn nasty, if the Philistines really do turn up on my doorstep, I'm big, strong Samson. I can handle the situation. And so he settles for a compromise, doesn't he? He settles for a sort of peaceful coexistence. And because of his strength, he didn't recognize his weakness. But far from peace in Delilah's embrace, what does he find? He finds that she nags him. She nags him to death. He tells her his secret. And we know what happens next. He ends up a slave in a Philistine prison. He ends up a grinder. He ends up bowing his shoulder to bear a burden. The strong man who thought he was master of the situation, and he ends up a slave. Now, Christian friend, is that you? The girl at the office. The girl is only a click away. I won't fall. I'm strong enough. I'm master of the situation. You have been warned. Maybe you're strong like Peter. And Peter is strong, isn't he? He's a natural leader. The other disciples look to him. He's the first among equals. And when Peter says to Jesus, no need to turn to it, but he says to him in Luke 22 verse 33, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Peter really does mean it. And if you look at the size of the man, you think, well, I'd like him to be with me in that situation, maybe. The strong man, he thinks he can handle the situation. But what happens? He ends up trembling before the words of a servant girl and denying the Lord. The strong man who didn't know his weakness, who thought his strength mapped across the whole of his character and personality. But it didn't. There was a fundamental weakness which was exposed. Issachar, Issachar, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. Now Peter will return. He really does have the strength to strengthen his brethren. But first he must understand, as all strong men must understand, that built into his strength is a fundamental weakness. He must never again think he can handle the situation. I am master of this matter. If he's going to be any use, he must recognize he's not as strong as he thinks that he is. So again, Christian friend, is that you? Maybe you say the great things that you're going to do for God. And maybe you are first among equals. Other people do look to you naturally for leadership. What you're going to do. And you're strong in so many areas, and you're making the mistake of thinking that that strength maps out across the whole of your personality and character. Well, you're heading for a fall. You have been warned. Samson, Peter. But we've really yet to get to the heart of this application, have we? Because, Christian friends, the dangers of Issachar, the land of lost opportunities, that danger is in us all. We're going to close with this. What do I mean? Well, Christian friend, has God blessed you with the good things of this life? Is your portion of the promised land particularly pleasant, say, compared with our brothers and sisters in Sri Lanka? Is the land especially fruitful? Do the blessings of this life come easy? And you've come to enjoy those blessings. You've come to expect those blessings. You've become used to a certain sort of lifestyle. He saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. And so what are you doing? You're giving your energies to home and family and holidays and hobbies and sport and social life and chilling out. You've worked hard maybe for a certain sort of life, and now you want to enjoy that life. Why put myself out? And while you have great potential to serve the Lord, it's going to waste. You have great strength. The opportunities are there. But like Issachar, you're unwilling to put yourself out. And all that potential which the Lord has given to you, the strong donkey, the one who can go places, the one who could serve the Lord in wonderful ways, the strength to help so many of other of God's people, all that strength is going to waste because you won't put yourself out. You've got comfortable in the lifestyle that you're in. Why put yourself out for Jesus? Why take up my cross and follow him? Why this hair shirt Christianity? And maybe it's gone further, because others are now moving into the land. And there are habits and compromises and changes and sins, and they're moving into the land, and they're all militating against your service to the Lord. And instead of rooting them out and going to war, that would mean hardship and difficulty and pain and putting yourself out, and you don't like that, you've got used to not doing that. You settle down to some peaceful coexistence, as long as you can continue to join the land, as long as you can continue to join your lifestyle. As it were, you've struck a deal with these things. You say, look, I won't bother you if you don't bother me. Let me carry on enjoying what I'm carrying on, and okay, these changes, these sins, these things that are creeping in, I can live with that for the moment, and anyway, I'm strong enough to do something about it later. Is that what has happened? Have you moved on to the next stage, as it were? You saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant, so you don't make the effort to do something about these things and throw them off. And they've started invading into your world. Maybe it's gone further still, because those compromises are now turning to slavery. And you haven't given your best for the Lord. You haven't put yourself out for Jesus. And now others are getting your best. And you've exchanged the service of Jesus and the cross of Christ for slavery to the world. Brother's company became more and more successful. So this Christian brother, a godly, godly man, what did he do? The more successful his company became, the harder he worked. The harder he worked, the more successful his company became. The more successful his company became, the harder he worked. So much so that he came to the point where there was no time for the Lord's work. And he came to a point where he began to enjoy the lifestyle that he had. He saw that rest was good, that the land was pleasant. Until one day he turned around and he said to his pastor, I've just wasted the last 3 years of my life. He put himself out for the company. It had become a slavery to him. But he got there because he stopped putting himself out for the Lord Jesus Christ. And he wasted his days. Christian friend, is that brother you? Do we work hard and harder to maintain a certain standard of living? Maybe it's undreamt of by other brothers and sisters, but it's just the way things are for us. And like Issachar, the landscape has got into us. And we can't conceive of it being any other way. I couldn't conceive of living in any different way. And now I'm doing nothing for Jesus, but I've become a slave to that lifestyle. Or maybe it's a slave to sport or to certain activity. Or maybe I have natural potential in a certain area. And I'm giving myself to it more and more and more and less and less and less to the service of the Lord. What do we read about Issachar? He bowed his shoulder to bear a burden. And because I no longer bow my shoulder to bear a burden of the Lord's work, not in this church, I'm bowing my shoulder to bear a burden in these other areas, in the service of others, but not for my Lord. And there's an area here, and I'm up and doing for that, and I never miss the opportunity to be busy there, doing whatever I'm doing. And I've become a slave to it. And I'm no longer up and doing for the Lord Jesus Christ. And we've got to ask this question, Christian friends, who's watching us? This is perhaps the most grievous thing of all. Who's watching us? Young Christians are watching us. Our children are watching us. And we're soaking them in our values. And they see us out and out for those things, but they no longer see us out and out for Jesus. And they draw the conclusion that those things really matter, but the things of Christ aren't so important. they can be left behind. And they know what's important to us, don't they? Because they live in the home, they see it. Well, no surprise then, if like the children of Issachar, there must have come a point in the tribe of Issachar when a generation who settled down for coexistence with these things ended up becoming the generation underneath slaves to these things. And if we stop putting ourselves out for Jesus Christ and we're becoming a slave to other things, then no surprise if our children watching us, picking up our values, become bigger slaves than we are. And the tragedy will be played out in their lives more than my life. He bowed his shoulder to bear a burden and became a band of slaves. What in your life at the moment do you want your children to imitate? What in your life at the moment do you want young Christians to watch, pick up, and copy? What do you want them to see? There's your answer. Issachar, so strong, capable of so much, but wouldn't put themselves out. And they became, it's a supreme paradox, they became slaves. So what's the answer as we close? The answer is found in one verse. No need to turn to it. It may seem an obscure verse, but it's not. It's one verse in 1 Chronicles. In chapter 12, we read of David's army. And in David's army, all the tribes are mentioned. And we come to the tribe of Issachar. This is David's army, the king's army. What do we read? Of the sons of Issachar, who had understanding of the times, to know what Israel ought to do. Their chiefs were 200, and all their brethren were at their command. When is the strong donkey strong? When is Issachar's potential realized? When Issachar submits to the king and serves in his cause. Christian friend, has the Son of David captured all your heart? Let's sing a hymn.